Psalm 25 of the Back to the Psalms series, section 1. Is the book of Psalms still relevant today? When David wrote Psalm 25, some 3,000 years ago, the situations prompting him to do so were very different than, say, the racial riots that we're experiencing in 2020, the past several weeks. The spiritual principles that he used to address his needs back then are the same and can still be applied. God is still the same. Man is still the same. Sin is still the same. We have enemies just the same. All that has changed is the name to the faces and the distance of time we've been trying to combat all of this. Psalms 25:16 reads, "Turn thee unto me and have mercy upon me, for I am desolate and afflicted." It's a story as old as time. It's absolutely shameful the way some men and women treat other men and women. There's one thing history repeatedly proves is that governments cannot change the hearts of men. They can only partially contain them, intimidate them, suppress them, attempt to reprogram and repatriate them. It works for a while on some, not all, and not for long. One of the ways this can be proven is the racial unrest that we're experiencing today. Think of how long men have inflicted each other with prejudice and hatred and oppression. This despite every form of legality, every form of peer pressure, every form of defense, every form of reasoning and negotiation and integration. Every form of these we've thrown at them, at this problem. Psalm 25:17 says, "The troubles of my heart are enlarged. O bring thou me out of my distresses." Seems as though the problems get better for a time, but it's still, it's a volatile calm. Just one lynching or one shooting from blowing the lid off the boiling kettle again. The troubles of the heart remain enlarged, inflamed, painful to the touch. People do what they might not otherwise do when the pressure is inevitably increased. The lines between ration and impulse are blurred. Most any reaction swiftly self-justified. One man's distress becomes his brother's, and then his family's, his communities, his people's, rightly so. But as we've also seen of late, his distress also becomes the business of organizers and activists, duplicitous elites, of radicals and anti-establishment agitators, criminally minded, some. We've talked about some of these leaders in previous Psalms as the wicked, who have, for their own selfish gain or the gain of their assembled cause, use this man's distress to inflame the masses against the upright, against the lawful, against the just, to steer this otherwise just cause towards their own favor against the saint. The wicked, of course, never solve this distress. It's only the base of their power. Where the wicked are in charge, there is only moaning and discontent. Psalm 25:18 reads, "Look upon mine affliction and my pain, and forgive all my sins." The psalmist cries out to the little God, not only for immediate relief, but also for lasting answers. It is not like any one of us have all the answers. We think that if we could do this or get that implemented, maybe that would help slightly. The affliction and pain will continue, however, just as they always have. So too, we are most often blind to the unintended consequences of our actions, even in the case of just cause. It is obvious that the final answer is not in our hands, though we very much want it to be. So some of us call out to God. For God to look upon our afflictions and our pain, we also have to know that He'll have to look upon our sins and forgive them. All of us have sinned. All of us are presently sinning. All of us will sin again. How can God favor one sinner over another unless one of those sinners is willing to turn away from one's sins, bow before God, and ask for His forgiveness? Some would say, but that man's sins are bigger than mine. They might well be, but there's no bigger sin than not repenting and asking God for God's forgiveness. Some would say, yeah, but I am the one being distressed. Even more reasons, sir, to get on your knees and confess. Psalms 25:19 reads, consider mine enemies, for they are many, and they hate me with cruel hatred. There are enemies without, enemies within. At times we ourselves can be our own worst enemies. Who is it that is our enemy when nearly all of us are in agreement that civil rights is an absolutely just cause? It is not the cause that you and I fight over. It is the path each of us choose to achieve that just cause. There are those that say that the USA was founded upon racist principles, and therefore in every detail is systematically racist. They will say that the only way to overcome this is to cut the tree down at its trunk. You know that a whole lot of people are going to fight you tooth and nail to not allow that to happen. Are these people racist? Are they enemies of this just cause? No. They disagree with the path you want to take to achieve this, but not disagree with the cause itself. Reverse the roles now. Are the people who insist on cutting the tree at its trunk, for all the division that they're creating, are they offering anything better? Let me ask this another way. Does the socialism that they want to replace this tree with offer a race-free solution? Of course not. The ideals of pure socialism have never been matched with any form of pure implementation, nor can it be. By excluding a sizable portion of otherwise likely followers by this cutting the tree down solution, are these radicals our enemy or enemies of the cause? No, probably not the majority of them. I began this commentary today by asking how anything David wrote 3 millennia ago could have relevance and practical application today. The enlightened modern man thinks that with proper education and environment and government, all these human ills will fall away. That man can do these things with the help of other like-minded men and women. The saint believes that man is a fallen creature, that only God can pick him back out of that. Psalms 25:16 reads, turn thee unto me and have mercy upon me, for I am desolate and afflicted. The wicked are bound to use this difference of belief against the saint. They'd say, see, the saint's solution is no solution at all. No, the saint's solution is built upon the changing of the individual hearts of men, the power of what the fear of the Lord can do within a man and a woman's soul deep down. Not every heart will allow itself to be changed like this. Therefore, it is not a complete answer. It is, however, as complete an answer as there ever will be in this life. And I plan the remainder of this commentary to examine why that is and why it must be, and what we need to do, therefore, actively, judiciously, lovingly, compassionately, because of that. It might well be said that we are all afflicted and pained, oppressed by our own fallen nature. The fallen nature is our biggest enemy. We are desolate of the ability to do much of anything about that. This does not mean that we have to sit on our hands and do nothing or not do anything positive about the just cause of civil rights. It means that we're going to have to approach it much differently.